Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Broadway Warm-Up Interview Series. Today's guest is the one and only Mr. Bobby Cronin.
It's from what's called a musical. And a musical is when they use songs to tell a story,
yeah.
Like a movie, but with singing.
Wow.
And I was like, I love this.
Bobby Cronin is an award-winning composer and writer. His projects include The Cover, Mary and Max, Sunset City, Till Death Do Us Part, Alone in the U.S., and The Concrete Jungle, each receiving several awards and performances throughout the United States and in London. Bobby composed the scores for several musical films for New York Film Academy, where he was also on faculty teaching pop rock performance and history, audition technique, business, and performance lab. I start this conversation by asking Bobby about his background. So without further ado, here's Mr. Bobby Cronin.
The youngest of five kids. We had one bathroom for seven of us growing up.
Okay.
No money.
Wow.
And my mother was the president of the Mother's Club at our Catholic school. I was always just so easy. So I would go anywhere with my mom. So
yeah.
I would go to all these meetings that she would go to. And I remember one day they decided that they were going to put on a show to raise money for the school.
Okay.
I was five. And I went to a rehearsal, and my mom and her friend started singing Bosom Buddies from Maine.
Okay.
I'd never heard music like that.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up listening to, because the house was so small, you know, Led Zeppelin from One Brother.
And, right.
You know, Neil Diamond and Golden Oldies and Fleetwood Mac and Pat Benatar, all these different styles going on, but never had heard theater music.
Okay.
The song finished, and I remember asking my mom, what was that?
Yeah.
And she said, oh, that's a song called Bosom Buddies. Well, what is that? And she said, it's from what's called a musical. And a musical is when they use songs to tell a story,
yeah.
Like a movie, but with singing.
Wow.
And I was like, I love this. Fast forward to the performance.
Uh-huh.
I was in the back of the theater. I was sitting right next to the spotlight.
Okay.
And as soon as, and it was in the gym of the school.
Okay.
But still, the lights went down, the spotlight came on, and I swear to God, it was as if something inside of me woke up.
Mm.
And I saw the curtain open and the light hit, and I walked like I was in a dream. I walked from the back all the way to the front, and I sat like this for 2 hours. And I remember saying to my mom, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I want to be a part of that.
Cool.
Do you remember that moment when you caught the bug? When you fell in love with theater, with acting, with music, with creativity, and once you did, there was no looking back? For me, it was a production of Aladdin back when I was 10 years old. It's different for everybody, but for Bobby, it was Bosom Buddies. And it was a teacher.
This teacher started introducing me to different musicals.
Mm-hmm.
And in class, he would show things like, I remember watching Pippin. I remember Sweeney Todd and being like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
And I was doing musicals. I was a hockey player.
Okay.
So actually, I went to college for hockey.
Oh, wow.
So trying to do both was really, really difficult.
Yeah.
But I was able to do it.
Yeah.
So once I started really learning musicals, I became so inspired by Stephen Schwartz.
Mm-hmm.
I became very inspired by Jerry Herman was able to do something that a lot of writers don't,
mm-hmm.
which is this incredible melodic hook,
mm-hmm.
that would just keep coming back. You could say any Jerry Herman song, you could sing the title.
Sure.
And that just always was in my mind. When I would go, I love Sondheim. Love lyrically Sondheim,
right.
But I would go see a Sondheim show and leave going, I can't sing you a thing.
Sure, sure.
Thing.
Yeah.
However, I was just so moved, and it's so smart and so different.
Yeah.
So I would say in theater, Schwartz, Menken, big time, Jerry Herman, but like my real influences are Queen.
That's cool.
And Elton John, Billy Joel.
Nice.
Elton John and Billy Joel, heck yes. No wonder why pop rock music is Bobby's specialty. Next, I asked Bobby about college and his experience at school.
I think I got a really great education there, not just in terms of, you know, math, science, history, language, and music, but theatrically, book-wise and practice-wise.
Yeah.
But then I also, because Yale, when I was there, Yale didn't have a musical theater program at all.
Okay.
So I convinced my dean to let me double major.
Wow, okay, nice.
And something that's actually important that I should tell you is, so like I said, I grew up with, we had no money. Mm-hmm. I begged for piano lessons, okay. And was told no.
Wow.
So at age like 10, I went to the library and I got books out and I started teaching myself how to play.
Wow.
And how to hear and how to, you know, listen to a song on the radio and go to the piano and try to, we got a piano because my great grandmother left it to my mom.
Okay.
And it was really just like a table for photos.
Sure, sure, yeah.
And in my house, because sports were the thing, like music was frowned upon, so it was very private.
Okay.
I did it, you know, secretly. I didn't want anyone to know that I was actually sitting there doing that and singing and
wow.
writing. And once I got to college, it was amazing. I met, like, my roommates were football players that were poets, and one was pre-med, one was an English lit major. My other roommate, who was my roommate all 4 years, was on crew, and he was a potter.
Okay.
And majored in MBMB, microbiochemistry and biophysics.
Damn.
Or something.
Yeah.
So it was so cool to meet these other people that could do more than one thing, which really inspired me to take a chance and do this.
It's easier now than ever before to be what I like to call a multi-hyphenate professional. So many people do so many different things nowadays. With the technology we have readily available at our fingertips, we no longer have to wait for the gatekeepers, and we can create and pursue whatever we wish. Bobby found this to be true, and he did a little bit of everything.
If I didn't know about history and art,
yeah.
and math even, you know, I don't think I could do what I do. I don't think I could create the characters,
sure.
and the stories, and the dramatic arcs if I didn't understand about culture.
Yeah.
You know, any piece of theater, I mean, look at what just happened with Hamilton.
Any piece
of theater is a representation of the moment in time.
Yeah.
And if you don't know that moment, if you don't know that time period, if you can't do your own approach to that time period, I think you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you know, before I was a successful writer,
right.
I was a director.
Okay.
I did national tours. I was an associate artistic director for theater. I had my own production company here.
Sure.
And I was working on a project with Stephen Schwartz as a director.
Okay.
And Stephen was like, Bobby, you're a writer. Why aren't you writing?
Wow.
Like, no. No one can know that. It's a secret.
Right.
And he really pushed me to use my voice, to find my voice and to use it.
Cool.
So, you know, I switched careers in my early 30s.
Wow.
Which was scary, but exciting.
Yeah.
So once I understood what I really wanted to do, that I really wanted to write, the exciting things were the audiences were now looking for a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to hear something they hadn't heard before.
Yeah.
They wanted to, you know, because of cable, Showtime, HBO, and now Netflix and Hulu, people want weird, I hate the word weird. People want non-conventional stories. They want something that is going to challenge them, surprise them. And that's my favorite about being able to write right now is, you know, I don't have to sit there and go, well, what's the wittiest way that I could tell this moment? We don't have to do that anymore.
Cool.
It gets to be, you know, what's the strongest way to tell this moment?
Mm.
What's going to challenge people instead of what's going to make people go, oh, nice.
How can you be an artist and not reflect the times? That, to me, is the definition of an artist. Nina Simone.
I actually asked my students the other day, what was South Pacific about? And they didn't realize
right.
the historical implications.
Because now we see it as sort of this fluffy, like...
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think in order to keep theater at its art
form,
we have to challenge people.
Cool.
We want people to look at it, you know, look at like a painting of Sunday in the Park. There's something happens to you. We want people to go to the theater, experience something for 2.5 hours and leave challenged, changed,
sure.
angry, excited. The worst thing would be to have someone leave going, yeah, it was good.
Exactly.
In my opinion, the theater should not be a safe place. The theater should challenge, upset, discomfort, call out, and upend. If the theater does not do this, the theater fails. If art as a whole does not do this, then art fails. If we go to the theater to feel safe or to see our own preferences and beliefs reflected on the stage, we are experiencing something other than art. I don't even know what to call it, but I asked Bobby, what are the things that keep you strictly focused on your work?
To allow myself to be a professional writer, mm-hmm. I write every day.
Okay.
And sometimes writing every day means that I sit at the piano, just press record on my iPhone, and just mess around for a few hours.
Sure, sure.
And then I will comb through what just came out of mm-hmm. me and say, oh, this feels like this project. This feels like this
wow.
character.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yes, that is pretty cool. And now I ask you, Mr. Bobby Cronin, which comes first, the music or the lyrics?
Come at the same time, but everything has to be lyrically based.
Okay.
Because to me, my job as a composer, sometimes I work with a lyricist, sometimes I'm the lyricist
yeah.
and composer.
Yeah.
When, they're two very different jobs. When I'm working not by myself, but I always have a book writer. Uh-huh. But when it's just me on music and lyrics, they have to fit in the world of the book. It can't suddenly be like, now we have a new voice.
Right,
it has
to
be seamless. So a lot of it will come from me calling, like in the middle of writing, I'll call my book writer.
Okay, yeah.
Say, explain to me why the character is making this choice.
Sure.
Explain to me where we need to end up. Things like that, because again, with the Showtime, HBO, Netflix stuff, people are ready to be challenged. So we don't want to have a song now that stops the action of the forward movement of the piece.
Mm.
I love the way that Bobby talks about writing, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he was actually a director. So here he talks about the relationship between directing, writing, and acting.
So I was in Yale's directing program.
Okay.
In the directing program, you had to take the core classes of the acting program.
Okay.
Because their belief was you can't direct if you don't understand what it feels like to perform.
Yeah.
Sondheim's whole thing is he says he's not a writer, he's an actor.
Sure, that's fascinating, yeah.
And for me, like when I write, 90% of the time I write in front of a mirror.
Uh-huh.
That's weird. anything that I write is a piece of me.
Uh-huh.
It really is. For any character, I could tell you the story behind any song of mine that you name and say what it actually means to me.
Yeah.
Where the ideas came from and how it hits me here.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I write in front of a mirror is if I'm writing something that's supposed to be really dark or really, you know, hard on the sleeve, I want to make sure that as I'm performing it while creating it, that it affects me.
Mm.
If I don't cry when I'm writing something sad, it's not good enough.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. If I don't laugh at myself when I'm writing a comedic song, that's not good enough.
Wow.
Because it's got to be honest enough for me that the actor can then interpret that honesty.
Wow.
You know, one of my favorite things that Meryl Streep has ever said, whom I'm a huge fan
of,
is that there's always one line in every project that she works on that she doesn't understand.
Sure.
And once she understands that one line, everything else falls into place. And uh-huh. she understands the reasons behind her character's choices. My job is to do that
uh-huh.
for the actor.
Wow.
They need to understand the reasons that the note's going up, that this note is held longer, that suddenly we're in a new time signature.
Yeah.
Love it, love it, love it, love it. Okay, so Bobby, what is it like when you see your work being performed? How is that for you?
I feel like my job, I have three modes.
Yeah.
There's writing mode,
uh-huh.
there's rehearsal mode,
yeah.
and then there's performance mode.
Cool. You never really get that same sort of freedom that you get in the rehearsal room
sure.
once it's up there. So what is that like when maybe something's going up on stage in front of an audience and you realize that a lot of it is sort of out of your hands, now you just gotta trust?
It's the worst.
Yeah.
Like, my first big production in London, I will never forget opening night. There was a joke coming
okay.
that I knew was filthy.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if the Brits would laugh.
Uh-uh.
Right before the joke came, I was this close to fainting.
Oh, no.
I got so nervous. I started to see stars.
Sure.
I took my hand and I reached out to my agent's leg.
Yeah.
And he looked at me, he's like, what's the matter? I was like, I'm going to faint. And then audience burst into laughter.
Okay, good.
And I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there is certain, for that project specifically, there were certain notes that were really rough. It's a super contemporary pop-driven score. And I would get so nervous that, you know, oh my God, is the actor going to hit it? Is the actor going to hit it? Which they never missed.
Yeah.
Never once.
Really?
But sitting there, yeah. My thing is, I go see my projects once.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
Okay.
So I know I got to get better about that. It's something I'm trying to do better with.
Sure.
But it's just so stressful. Part of it goes back to what I was saying to you earlier, is that writing for me has always been so private.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And to share it with, you know, hundreds of people at a time, it's really, it's scary.
Because yeah.
I'm sure it's what an actor feels like. I'm literally putting who I am in front of thousands of people.
That's extremely vulnerable, yeah.
It's very cool to hear Bobby relate writing to acting. Now I ask Bobby, what makes a good actor? What do you look for in the actors you collaborate with?
So my favorite type of actor is someone that comes in with choices.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that's bold and brave, fearless.
Yeah.
Nuanced.
So they've done the work.
They've done homework. Or even sometimes if I just give them a song and we're working, you know, on the fly.
Sure.
Someone that asks questions.
Yeah.
Embody a character.
Yeah.
That will understand every single word.
Yeah.
And every single note.
Yep.
Like, why is this word stressed?
Yeah.
Why is this word held over the bar line?
Yeah.
Things like that. That, to me, is a very smart, detailed actor.
Yeah.
And that's what I love.
Well, I imagine you would, because all of that was intentional on your part.
Yes.
So to maybe gloss over that, or that would seem like, you know, they just weren't finding those nuances that you've written in, and you've done them a favor. So what advice do you have for auditioning? What makes a great audition?
Be yourself.
Yeah.
Remember, it's your audition. It's not my audition. It's yours.
Yeah.
And we are, from behind the table, we are praying that every person that comes in will be the one that we're looking for.
Yeah.
Because that makes our jobs so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of actors think that we're sitting behind the table like,
sure.
Come on, who's next?
Yeah. Cool.
We're sitting behind the table hoping that when you come in, you're the person we're looking for.
Yeah.
And that's, do you hear what I said? The person.
Yeah.
Not the actor. Mm. The person.
Mm.
Because as a writer, part of my decision-making process is, do I want to spend 6 weeks with this person?
Yeah.
Do I trust that this person will be passionate about the project?
Yeah.
That they will be easy to work with? How did they talk to the pianist? How did they talk to me when I said, how are you? Did they even respond?
Right.
Did they hear me? We also love smart choices.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, let's say you're going in for like How to Succeed or something. And let's say you're going in for Sound of Music.
Okay.
Right? You're an older woman and you are going in for the maid.
Mm-hmm.
If you came in and you did something super smart, like did 50% from ballroom,
sure,
which has lyrics about ironing his shirt and making it that you are taking the character that you are auditioning for and putting it into a context that, for me, behind the table, I say, I have to have her.
Yeah.
Because that was the smartest thing. Instead of someone coming in and singing a beautiful song,
right?
Everybody can sing.
Right, right, right.
And I think so many actors forget that, and all they do is focus on their voice.
And then on that too, some of the best musical theater actors, maybe, you know, they're definitely very good singers, but some of the ones that I really love maybe don't have the most traditionally beautiful voice, but it's because they're such great storytellers that makes them the actors we admire.
Look at every famous musical theater person.
Yeah.
Do any one of them have a beautiful voice? No.
Not in
Kylie
the...
Lepone.
Yeah.
Bernadette Peters.
Yeah.
Mandy Patinkin.
Yeah.
These are all like unique, weird, but so story-based.
And they make us feel something, which is what the point is in the first place.
I mean, Michael Rupert, who is, in my opinion, a god,
has one of
like the worst recorded notes in musical theater history on the Falsettos album. But you know what? Every time I hear it, I cry.
Yeah.
Because it is so passionate.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know? And the story is getting told. And Carol Channing. Mm-hmm. That woman, when she was younger, she was a great singer. But sure. As she got older, she hardly really like carry a tune.
Right.
But there is something about her.
Yeah.
And that's what we are looking for.
Yas, awesome. Now, what do you have to say about pop rock auditions? Go.
I do a lot of teaching pop rock. It's okay. Like my specialty.
Nice.
And you know, the number one thing that I tell students all the time is stop acting.
Mm.
Don't act.
Mm-hmm.
Exist. Feel what you are saying.
Yeah.
We as an audience should feel like we're watching something we're not supposed to.
Right.
This is very private because when you write a pop song,
yeah,
it is very different than writing a theater song.
Mm.
Theater song, you have to think what's the beginning, the middle, and end to bring the character to the next point.
Yeah.
A pop song, Katy Perry sits down, she's having a bad day, and she writes a song.
Yeah.
So there is no character. You have to become the character, which is why pop music has become so popular in auditions.
Yeah.
Because it's a chance for us to see who are you.
Being someone who writes stories for a living, I'm curious to know what kind of stories you are most drawn to. What kind of movies do you watch? What kind of books do you read? What are the stories that get you excited?
I love things that make you go, well, what would I do?
Yeah.
Like, one of my favorite movies is Crash.
Okay.
And there's a moment in Crash where this woman is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
She's in a car crash.
Yeah.
The thing is about to blow into flames. She's upside down. She's stuck in the seatbelt. And the person that comes to save her is the same person that raped her.
Mm, wow. At least. Damn.
And she's panicking and freaking out. And I remember, like, freaking out watching it.
Yeah.
Because all I could think of was, what would I do in that instance?
Yeah.
If the person that could save me was the person that hurt me.
Wow.
What would I choose?
Yeah.
And then I love when we write our characters to do the opposite of what most people would
do. Yeah. Such intense conflict that maybe doesn't get resolved or resolved in a way that we wouldn't expect.
Yeah, it's got to have twists and turns.
Yeah.
Otherwise...
Yeah,
you know, your story's 20 minutes long.
Right. And along with that, you were just talking about Crash. Are there any movies or books in particular that you would recommend an actor or writer or creatives read or watch? Any that stick out to you that have really informed your work?
Oh yeah, God. I love any
Baz Luhrmann film. This part got cut off. I have no idea why, but he said Baz Luhrmann film. I love any Baz Luhrmann film.
I think it takes a very special actor to be able to do his work.
Yeah.
Because it's so truthful, and
right.
Yet it's fantastic.
Mm, yeah.
And I think to ride that line, like Moulin Rouge.
Right.
That hunky man, what's it, Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, he's great in that.
Perfection in
yeah.
That film.
Yeah.
Because when he needs to be heightened.
Right.
His heightened is believable.
Mm-hmm. That's such a key element, yeah.
It's such a key element. And I think in musical theater, where so much of it is heightened to begin with,
right.
You have to find a way to make things super realistic. I make all of my students read The Secret.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
Because to me, that is how one should live their life.
Yeah.
Of being truthful to who they are, not holding on to things that have hurt them. And it's, you know, I would say to my students as an artist,
yeah.
When bad things happen to us, that's kind of good.
Right.
Because then we can take that. The power in it is you can then take it and use it.
Yeah.
The weakness in it is when you let it bring you down.
Right.
And it's easy to be negative.
Yeah.
It's hard to be positive.
Yeah.
And I think if you can be positive in this industry, if you can have an understanding that this industry isn't fair, it's
mm-hmm.
not.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you think it's going to be, understand right now, it's not.
Yeah.
And if you can just go along with that idea of, you know, especially for actors, you're not going to get a job because you have brown hair.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's it. You're not going to get a job sometime because you're 2 inches too short.
Yeah.
Nothing you can do about that. You're not going to get a job sometime because you look like the director's ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
That's just the way this business is.
Yeah.
And every business has their own weird things.
Of course.
But to me, The Secret is important in terms of – because I think it works on two levels. It works on how to be a human being / artist.
Mm-hmm.
But it also works on how to perform.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me – so big point of The Secret is you have to believe the things that you want.
Mm.
So instead of saying things like, well, why did he get a Tony? Or, I'm not sick. No, it's positive. I am healthy.
Yeah.
I'm healthy. I'm going to win a Tony.
Wow.
That you can put that mindset
yeah.
in there, then you are imagining it and you're starting to believe it.
Yeah.
Isn't that the job of an actor?
Yeah.
To imagine it and to believe it?
Yeah.
So I think the secret for me has, it's so helpful for actors.
Yeah.
Because I will say to them many times when they're performing, well, stop, what's the movie in your mind?
Mm.
And they're like, what?
Right.
What is playing in here? Mm-hmm. Because I see nothing mm-hmm. in your eyes.
Yep.
You don't believe
yep.
because you don't see it.
Yep.
And that's the point of the secret. If you can't see it, it won't happen.
Wow.
To me, Sutton Foster is a goddess.
Yes.
You watch her and everything she is believing.
Yep.
It's like her eyes are movie screens.
Yeah.
And that is, it's something I greatly look for.
Yeah.
Is the imaginative world of an actor big enough to fill a 3,000 seat theater.
Yeah. And, okay.
Related
so,
to that sort of constant positivity, it seems, that you're able to develop is also your willingness to give back to charities and to, you know, you have several benefits, things like that.
And I saw another interview that you did where you talked about how the entertainment industry can be inherently selfish in a lot of ways because we're so focused on our own paths. And I think in some ways, you know, it's necessary, but in other ways, it keeps us, as you said in this interview, in a bubble. So when did you develop that sort of selflessness and that generosity? Is that something that you've always had or that you've gotten over time? Like
a mix of both.
Yeah.
My mom, you know, like I said, we grew up with nothing.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
But we never dwelled on it.
Mm-hmm.
It was what it was. And my mom's response to anyone complaining would always be something like, think about all the positive things that you have in your life.
Yeah.
You're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You have a roof over your head. You have love.
Yeah.
People care about you. You're smart. You know, all these things. And so I was taught from an early age to see the world in a positive way.
Right.
This business, like I said, can make you very negative.
Mm-hmm. Suddenly somebody who saw themselves as so optimistic, because to even enter this business, I think you need an optimism. So I think everybody has that going in, but I think a lot of people
yes.
lose that pretty quickly.
You know, you have to be your own cheerleader.
Yeah.
You have to, it goes back to belief.
Yeah.
You don't believe in yourself, who's going to believe in you?
Right.
Why would, if you walk into a room, a meeting, an interview, if I meet you on the street and you're all, oh, I don't know if I'm any good.
Yeah.
I'd be like, well, why would I want to spend time with you?
Yeah, right.
You know? But if there's an understanding that this is your job.
Sure.
Not that I'm the best thing in the world, I'm the cockiest.
Right.
It's just an understanding that this is my job. This is what I do. I love it. I'm
cool.
good at it. And I'm excited to show you what I do.
Yeah.
That type of thing. But also my mom raised us that you should live your life treating people the way you would like to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very lucky.
Yeah.
In this. I just did a thing for the Dramatist Guild Fund. Where like 5 years ago, I had no money while my dad was dying. I had no money.
Really?
I couldn't pay my rent.
Right.
To quit.
Yeah.
And they gave me a grant.
Uh-huh.
No questions asked. They just, that's what they do, the Dramatist Guild Fund. They're incredible.
Right.
And it was through that was a big reminder of, okay, someone just gave to me. Now it's my turn. I got to give back.
Right.
My career's starting to boom. I got to share what's inside of me.
Mm.
And help others. And I've always loved animals.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the classes I teach at New York Film Academy is it's called Professional Preparation.
Okay.
I call it the biz of theater.
Cool.
And you can't pass the class. Final day, every student does a presentation of a charity in which they're going to work very hard as a performer so that when they get a lot of money, they can help them.
That's amazing.
And if they don't succeed in that, I've yet to have someone not succeed in that. But if they don't succeed, then they don't pass.
Wow.
Because to me, that – it goes back to, in a way, another part of the question of the selfishness.
Yeah.
You have to be selfish.
Sure. Yeah.
But if you can understand that there's a – at the end of the tunnel
– Yeah.
There is a way for you to give back.
Yeah.
That once – once, you know, I love helping people. I love it. I love helping people. I love getting actors jobs. I love recommending people.
I also know
I'm putting good energy into the world.
Exactly.
But this world is so full of such bad, you know, this election has been really hard for me because
yeah.
I finally felt that we were living in a world where I was no longer in junior high.
Right.
Being made fun of for how I was born.
Right.
You know, I'm not young, and it just, to me, it was only in the past 10 years that I really felt free.
Sure.
And to now see people being hurt
yeah.
because of how they're born. And I'm talking skin color, sexual orientation.
Of course,
like,
yeah.
It just, it pains me
yeah.
to know that that is what this world is coming to.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what am I doing in order to try to make myself feel better? I'm fostering another dog. Like I'm
right.
doing as many things as I can to remain positive
right.
and to go back to that golden rule of just treat people the way you want to be treated.
And what's
always thinking that.
That yeah. you're, as you said, cultivating this mindset in yourself of positivity and of growth. So it's really doing yourself a favor as well.
Yeah. So. And it's also... It also gives you self-worth.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are going to be times
right.
in this industry where you're blue as can be
yeah.
because you can't pay your rent
yeah.
or you didn't get the job that you had 5 callbacks
right.
for that was going to be your big...
And that and you were giving yourself that worth. That was your validation. If you have something above that and more meaningful than that, then that's where it gets it. That's cool.
Bingo.
Yeah, yep. Amazing.
Lots of great stuff here. It really is so incredibly important to remain positive and optimistic in this life. And next I asked Bobby, what was the best advice you ever received?
Okay, so the best advice that I got would be from 3 people. They gave me the same piece of advice.
Okay.
And these people would be, and I'm totally name dropping.
Okay.
They'd be Hal Prince.
Wow.
Stephen Schwartz.
Okay.
And Alan Menken.
Damn, that's a good crew.
They all asked me the following question.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want?
Mm.
And I had never, and in a way this goes to The Secret.
Yeah.
I had never really envisioned anything.
Yeah.
So I really couldn't answer it.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of self-exploration and, you know, I made a vision board
yeah.
of just, you know, what do I want?
Sure.
Who do I want to be? What footprint do I want to leave in this world?
Yeah.
And that's what really helped me transition out of directing and into writing of, well, if this is the secret passion of mine, why am I keeping it secret?
Wow.
And that's all, folks. Thank you so much to Mr. Bobby Cronin for an amazing conversation. It was super inspiring. Go out and pursue what excites you. Pursue your passions, pursue your dreams, and you can make it happen. Bobby Cronin did just that. This was an awesome conversation. I hope you enjoyed it. Come back soon for more. And one more question. Bobby, what advice would you give your younger self?
The only person you have to prove anything to is yourself.
Mm.
Bam. The only person you have to prove anything to is yourself. Thank you, Bobby Cronin. Peace out, y'all. Come back soon.